Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod. My name is Kyle Senra, and this is a solo episode today. Unfortunate news in this circumstance. Former Packers general manager Ted Thompson has passed away at the age of 68. And I felt the need to kind of talk about this, really. He was not just a great general manager for the Packers, but a great person, ambassador for the organization, and for all accounts, a great human being as well. So just wanted to touch on the life of Ted Thompson. We've talked about him at times on this podcast, and we hold him in the highest of regards. He was a key part of both of the Packers' recent Super Bowl wins. You know, the only two Super Bowls they've won since the Lombardi era, and Thompson played key roles in both. And so, just again, talk about the life of Ted Thompson. Born in Atlanta, Texas, which is also where he was when he passed away, which that aspect is kind of nice. Seems like the ties to his hometown of Atlanta, Texas, were very strong. And actually played professional football. He was, researching into him more, I then kind of realized how significant he was of an NFL player. I knew he played, but I thought more, oh, is it just a small stint? But he actually played 10 seasons in the NFL. He was a linebacker with the Houston Oilers. He played his entire career with the Houston Oilers. So, you know, a lot of his life was in Texas initially. He played from 75 until 84. And then eventually, a few years later, in 1992, was hired as a scout for the Green Bay Packers by Ron Wolf. And, you eventually earned the title Assistant Director of Pro Personnel, Director of Pro Personnel for a few years, Director of Player Personnel. And it was in that time as Director of Pro Personnel that the Packers won the Super Bowl in 1996 season. And then eventually he actually left for Seattle to join Mike Holmgren, who he worked under. He worked under Ron Wolf, but he had worked, you know, maybe alongside Mike Holmgren as the head coach for the Packers during his whole tenure there, and joined Mike, who was in Seattle, not only as head coach, but as the general manager, head of football operations. And he hired Thompson to be his number two guy, his VP of football operations, which he held for four seasons. And then the big gig came for Thompson. 2005, was hired by the Packers to be the general manager. And, you know, five seasons later, they won the Super Bowl. And, he remained general manager until 2017, incredible 12 years. Only one Super Bowl. Obviously, we would have liked to have more as Packers fans, but the tremendous success the team had, the consistency. There was a stretch there where they made the playoffs eight straight years, which at the exact same time tied the Patriots as that active streak. And theirs ended the year Rodgers broke his collarbone. But the Patriots kept going a couple more years. But for a while there, they were neck and neck in terms of consistency of making the playoffs alongside the Patriots. And I believe in that stretch for first little bit, there was only one Super Bowl win each. So, both of these teams, you could say that there was a time where the Packers were, if not the most successful team in the NFL, certainly the second most. And that's all under Ted Thompson's tenure. And so just an incredible person. It seemed like he really encompassed not just excellent strategy as a head of a football team, but learning to win the right way, being ambassadors for the sport and for the city, and for your families, and everything that they do, everything you do as a member of a football team reflects on the entire organization. I don't think any blemish on Ted Thompson's record as an exemplary human being. He certainly preached that for his players and for the whole of the organization and the coaches. But, he also practiced that, and he walked the walk as well as gave the talk. And certainly, that's what you want from someone leading an organization, is to have that accountability throughout. I don't think he would say he was perfect in terms of his draft record or signing free agents. But, he trusted the process, trusted the team he put in place enough, And he had made quite a lot of pretty successful draft picks. I actually did want to go through that a little bit. Obviously, everyone knows that the very first draft pick Ted Thompson made was Aaron Rodgers, which, I'll be honest, as much as, you know, we can give him credit for that, you know, pulling the trigger, but it's the easiest pick in the world to make. I mean, realistically, and, you know, this isn't exaggeration as a Packers fan, I think it's pretty blatant obvious Aaron Rodgers was the best player in the 2005 draft class, and it wasn't even particularly close, yet somehow fell to 24. It's a mass mistake by 23 other teams. We'll just say it. Because I don't think any of those teams had have a better quarterback than Rodgers, even if they had quarterbacks in place. We've seen it with the Cardinals recently. If you can get a better quarterback, you do it. You want the best possible. So, you know, even the teams that, oh, we just drafted a guy, it's not an excuse. If Rodgers is better than all of them, and he certainly was, they should have done that. So, you know, kudos to Thompson to just end the madness. You know, why is this guy even available at 24? Of course we're going to take him. Like, there's no question. So, you know, great on Thompson to obviously make the obvious pick. But he's made some really good picks elsewhere on the team. I mean, A.J. Hawk was a first-round pick by him. B.J. Raji. Clay Matthews, that same draft class in 2009. That was such a key draft class for the Packers' success that won them a Super Bowl, you know, one season afterwards, the 2010 season. So both of those guys in their second year are really dominant players. And right off the bat, right in their first season, they were dominant players. You know, a little more recently, there was a few years there where the Packers just didn't have first-round picks because why bother? Let's trade our first to make the team better and try and win. You're in a Super Bowl window basically for a large portion of that tenure. That makes sense, that strategy. You know, but you know, when they did grab players in the first round, they were high impact players. And if they couldn't get those types of players, they would trade out and they'd, you know, accumulate extra assets. Didn't always work out, but you see a few of those, you know, it was late tenure. You've got HaHa Clinton Dix in 2014, Demaryius Randle 2015, Kenny Clark 2016. Obviously, save the best for last of those three. Demaryius Randle was an awful pick. Again, he wasn't perfect, but, you know, HaHa Clinton Dix turned out to be a really great safety. I know they let him walk after his rookie contract. You're not going to re-sign everybody. So actually, they traded him that offseason. Got, you know, recouped some value back in terms of picks for him. HaHa Clinton Dix was a great player when he was with the Packers. So totally justified as a pick. Like, that was, he hit on that one. You know, whether he, you know, at the end of the rookie contract, only got a third for him, but, you know, the 3.5 seasons you had when he was on the field were incredible, and the team had success with him there. So HaHa Clinton Dix, Kenny Clark, two great picks, again, first round picks towards the end of his tenure, 2014, 2016. His final draft was 2017, which again, there they drafted Kevin King in the second round, I believe. So it was another one where they didn't like the players there at the end of the first, and Ted Thompson wasn't afraid to trade down and get the player that he wanted, which Kevin King's also turned out to be a good corner. We'll see if, I mean, obviously hasn't been traded like Clinton Dix, but we'll see what that happens at the end of his rookie contract. But, you know, he's been a pretty solid corner for the Packers. You look at the second round, Nick Collins, I know, back to Sam, one of his favorite Packers players, that same draft class as Rodgers, like that, to get those two picks and that type of impact. And Nick Collins, if not for injuries, would have had a much longer career, but certainly when he played was among the best safeties in the league. The next year, second round pick, Greg Jennings. A couple years later, they drafted Jordy Nelson in the second round. You know, later on, more skilled position players in the you know, middle, late of his tenure, Randall Cobb, Eddie Lacy, but certainly 2014, Davante Adams. As much as the HaHa Clinton Dix pick was good, the Adams pick, again, one of his best, really. And I mean, he's had so many. You look, even the third round, it hasn't been as great of success. You know, James Jones, JerMichael Finley, again, Finley, another player derailed by injuries, but was a solid player and certainly worth that capital. But I'm, you know, I think the great thing with Thompson was identifying talent throughout the draft in every round. And it seemed like he really liked the fourth round for a few good players. I mean, Will Blackman, Devon House, Mike Daniels was a fourth round pick. That was a great, solid pick. Blake Martinez, again, let him walk at the end of his rookie contract, but through that rookie contract was an incredible linebacker, a tackling machine. I know, again, coverage, not the greatest in that, but I mean, for a fourth round pick, Martinez certainly exceeded expectations. But it's the offensive lineman in the fourth and fifth round, really. Josh Sitton, fourth round pick in 2008. TJ Lang, fourth round pick in 2009. Both of them were key to the Super Bowl win in 2010 as part of that offensive line. David Bakhtiari, fourth round, 109th overall. Actually, it's funny. TJ Lang was also 109th overall. But, you know, it's incredible to find this talent. And certainly Bakhtiari's developed as a pro far beyond the expectations. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been taken in the fourth round, naturally. Corey Linsley, fifth round pick. And both Bakhtiari and Linsley were the highest. They both received the highest votes on the first team All-Pro list just here in 2020 and boxed on that a few times before. You know, I think with Bakhtiari, I think it's almost a locked in case that he's the best tackle in the NFL right now. But I think Corey Linsley really made a strong case for himself as well in that case. Again, we're about to find out what happens with Corey Linsley and his future with the team. But, you know, just incredible savvy by Thompson these late rounds, especially for offensive linemen, really knew what to look for in offensive linemen, it seems. But he was also great with undrafted free agents. Tremont Williams was an undrafted free agent. You know, one of the oldest Packers that's still playing aside from Aaron Rodgers. It looks like he really knew, especially corners, because Sam Shields was also an undrafted free agent. A few tight ends. I mean, Lance Kendricks, they're not the most exciting tight end, but I liked him. I thought when he and Jimmy Graham were on the team at the same time, he was the better tight end than Jimmy Graham. You won't be able to convince me otherwise. But the current starting tight end, Robert Tonyan, also an undrafted free agent. So his final year, actually, 2017. So that even that last class, even though, 2017 draft class, you've got some good hits, but certainly Robert Tonyan, an undrafted free agent, is one of the gifts that's really helped impact this team. And of course, he's the one that signed a pretty nice contract, really hefty, was willing to dole out the money to Charles Woodson. 7 year, $52.7 million. Which, to be fair, I'm thinking now, this was signed in 2006, but if this was signed in 2016, that's a massive underpay, just based on the inflation of the salary cap. But, to go after an elite player like that, one of the all-time greats at corner, maybe one of the, we've talked about a few moves. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers' move is maybe the most impactful, but probably next to it is Charles Woodson and bringing him to Green Bay. So, I think the life of Ted Thompson, obviously celebrate him as a human, but, we are a Packers podcast, a football podcast, so celebrate the football accomplishments and all the great players that he drafted. And then, it's to also add to what Thompson does, it's not just with the players. I mean, he's the one, he hired Mike McCarthy. Say what you will about McCarthy. Yes, at the end of his tenure, the offense wasn't innovative enough. And Mike McCarthy's biggest failure was his inability to surround himself with a good offensive staff that could help develop him, make him better, as opposed to a bunch of yes men. That's basically what he had at the end of his career. A bunch of guys that thought like him, so there was nothing was ever going to change on the team. But Mike McCarthy that was great. Won a Super Bowl. There's no guarantee, as great as Aaron Rodgers, as great as having Charles Woodson was, as great as the collective of the team, the receivers, the offensive line, the pass rush, and Clay Matthews and his impact, there's no guarantee the Packers win a Super Bowl if it's a different head coach than Mike McCarthy. So maybe they still do. Good enough head coach, probably, but again, no guarantees there. So, you can't, again, as much as it was not so great at the end, you can't look at the Mike McCarthy hiring as anything short of a success. They won a Super Bowl with it. That's the point. That's why Ted Thompson was hired. The Packers believe you can lead us to a Super Bowl. And he did. And we'll see. And again, there's still so many of the players that he has drafted that are still in this roster. And, the people he's put in place. I was watching just old interviews with Ted Thompson. And the question was asked, who are the most influential people in your life? And he named two, really. Ron Wolf, naturally, as the Packers. He also mentioned Bum Phillips, who was the Oilers' head coach and general manager that signed Thompson as an undrafted free agent. And so, I gave him a chance and retained him on the team for 10 seasons. And I think obviously this, it was the only coach he knew, I think, so as a player. So, you know, learning about the game and learning that entire aspect from a guy like Bum Phillips, who was not just a head coach, but a general manager, massively influential. But Ron Wolf, I think, did a tremendous job, not just making good personnel decisions as a GM, but installing a GM tree, really, but a culture, a system. This is the way we're going to do things in Green Bay. You know, a blueprint of sorts to figure out, you know, strategies and scouting and just, you know, roster construction. And, you know, once, you know, free agency hit and, you know, the big ideas of what the salary cap is and how to navigate that. And, you know, Ron Wolf was an incredible GM. Ted Thompson under him eventually evolved into an incredible GM, as we saw. Could be just as remarkable of a career as Ron Wolf, which is saying quite a lot because of how accomplished Ron Wolf is. So again, just, you know, again, I just felt this episode to talk about Ted Thompson, the culture he leaves in Green Bay and all of his accomplishments. Now, as much as I do want this episode to be about Thompson, I think, you know, celebrating Ted Thompson's life and accomplishments also has to start, you know, from the top down of an organization. It's, you know, as much as the GM has influence, a solid owner, and I mean, in case of the Packers, it's the ownership group, and, you know, CEO Mark Murphy technically represents them now. But for most teams, it's having a solid owner and really creating that culture from the top down, putting the right people in place, identifying smart general managers that can, you know, that can properly build a team, have a very detailed, solid plan on not just how to build a team, but how to put proper scouting in place, what you're looking for from your scouts. It seems like the best general managers are very detailed in what they want their scouting staffs to look for. And the ones that aren't so organized are kind of just, oh yeah, do whatever you want and let us know. Right? But if you've got a system in place that everyone organizes and view things the same way and thinks about things the same way, not even exactly the same way, but at least the same framework. In that way, it makes comparisons easy for player evaluations and thus, you know, making roster decisions and making draft decisions and, you know, informing trade decisions as well. So you need that obviously from the general manager, but you also need that from the ownership to help support that, have the patience to go through knowing that sometimes these processes take a while. And, you know, as much as Ted Thompson, you know, feels we should just make this episode about him, I think a part of him also wouldn't mind if we ripped on the Lions a little bit here. And I just think, which I do every episode, so you know, if you didn't guess what's going to happen here, the trick's on you. But truthfully, Lions hiring Dan Campbell, is he a better head coach than Matt Patricia? He doesn't even need to coach a game to convince me that, yes, he is a better head coach than Matt Patricia. I mean, he's been an interim head coach before. So he's got some experience. I mean, actually probably more experience than Patricia had coming in. But mostly Dan Campbell's been a tight ends coach. He's never been a coordinator, which strikes me as odd. Rare do you ever see guys that bypass the coordinator jobs ever have success. And I, you know, part of it is he's been with the Saints since 2016. He's been assistant head coach as well as tight ends coach. But, you know, and I know with the Saints, they've also got Pete Carmichael running the offense. Like, the offense all runs through Sean Payton, Pete Carmichael. So tight ends coach Dan Campbell probably has very little input from a tight end spot, which is, you know, allows him to be able to be an assistant head coach to really, you know, work with Sean Payton on the overall head coaching decisions, not so much on the offense. From the sounds of it, it sounds like Dan Campbell's not calling plays, which obviously he's never done before. So it would be a massive mistake to jump to head coach and do that at the same time, right? So, you know, good on him to, you know, to make that. Obviously, I don't think he ever considered calling plays. I don't think he would have ever thought of it. Like, you know, he's coming to be head coach because he believes he can orchestrate a game as a head coach. But again, the truth is the guys that weren't coordinators ever rarely have success. So I'm very worried of it. And if people are just impressed by the press conference where he wants players to bite other players' knees. Like, I know everyone's like, oh, the energy. It's, you know, one of the reasons I despise the Lions is because of Ndamukong Suh, and it's because of stuff like that. Like, that's, I don't like that at all, to be honest. Like, I'm not impressed by him saying he wants his players to bite other players. Like, oh yeah, such a tough attitude. Not really. I mean, the tough attitude is, you know, you get pushed, you push back. You don't bite players. I know he's probably not literally saying, telling his players to bite other players. It's, and if he is, then this is such a Lions pick. My point was, I believe Dan Campbell's going to be a better head coach than Matt Patricia, but to me, that wasn't the point of this. Matt Patricia was the worst head coach in the NFL last year. I think the only guy you can maybe say was as bad is Doug Marrone. And they had a one-win season. Obviously, much worse roster in Jacksonville than in Detroit. I think it starts with a quarterback, obviously. With a great quarterback like Stafford, and, you know, talented defense. They had a very talented defense when Patricia got there. They've lost some players because of Patricia. And again, I'm not complaining necessarily. I like it when the Lions fail and are just awful as an organization, because it makes it easier for the Packers to beat them, as we saw this year. Unlike last year, where it was tough to beat them. Or 2 years before, where the Lions swept the Packers. Like, I don't like that. but truthfully, though, the reason I don't think that they succeeded on this head coach hire is because any head coach they were going to make was better than Patricia. But the problem is, you hired Patricia after firing Jim Caldwell. Do I think Dan Campbell's a better head coach than Jim Caldwell? Absolutely not. Because I've got zero proof to say that. Dan Campbell may prove me wrong. He could. But Jim Caldwell was an excellent head coach. And, you know, it's going to be tough for Campbell to even live up to that, let alone surpass that. And if he's unable to do so, I consider that a failure. This organization, if they're really serious about winning, needs to, you know, set their standards higher. I still to this day don't understand why Jim Caldwell was fired. Is Bob Quinn really that awful? Like, he just complete awful GM? Probably. Maybe. The proof of it is, like, you know, Detroit's, you know, you've had some good players that you've had long term, longer than when Quinn got there. So I don't know that Quinn in his tenure as GM made this team better. So you can't blame it all on Patricia, but you can blame Patricia for his own actions, his lack of respect for other human beings. Like, that's just awful. It seems like Dan Campbell's the opposite of that, which is good news. Like, it seems like, you know, as a former player, he loves and respects his players. He's going to go to war for him. It seems very Mike Vrabel-esque, but Mike Vrabel is an incredibly intelligent head coach. He understands the rules of football so well. Does Dan Campbell? Again, I have no proof that he does, so I can't say yes. Certainly, I don't know for sure, so I can't really say no, but this might work out. But my point is, there were better, they're not even better, but because again, we don't know, but what appears to be better, more qualified, I'll say that, more qualified people who were deserving to be head coaches. Eric Bieniemy, the Bills offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll. Like, both of those guys have been coordinators, and Daboll's really turned around Josh Allen this season. Maybe that's Stephon Diggs. Maybe that's Josh Allen himself. But, you know, the steps that he's had allowed this team to take, Brian Daboll seems like a much better option than Dan Campbell to me. Because what has Dan Campbell done? He's been under Sean Payton, the most brilliant offensive mind in the game, and Pete Carmichael's the other guy running the offense. Like, really, what has Dan Campbell done to make that team better? What is his contribution? How is he going to, you know, is he good at observing Sean Payton and seeing the way that he ran the team? And is he going to copy that, make it his own? Okay, sure. But you're telling me Eric Bieniemy can't do that under Andy Reid, given all the responsibilities that he had under an offense? And Braden Holacek, our full press coverage Chiefs managing editor, wrote an article earlier in the season, I think it was before the season, talking about how Eric Bieniemy, in terms of responsibilities for an offensive coordinator under Andy Reid, had much more input, influence, and, you know, tasks of teaching and responsibilities than Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy. Those guys got head coaching jobs no problem. Nagy's still a head coach for the Bears, even though he probably shouldn't be. But again, Packers fan not complaining. Keep the bad coaches in place. I'm fine with it. That's part of me is happy that the Lions made what I see as a big mistake hiring Dan Campbell. When again, I think you have two incredibly qualified, intelligent, ready to be head coaches available, Brian Daboll and Eric Bieniemy. You can't say it for Daboll, but for Eric Bieniemy, are the Lions really that racist as an organization? That's the proof of what they've done with their head coaches makes it the only logical option. Why is Eric Bieniemy not hired here? Why did they fire Jim Caldwell in the first place? Like, the only common denominator there is they're both black. Are the Lions, and is Martha Ford that bent out of shape with race relations that, like, they don't want a black head coach and, you know, look for any excuse to fire Caldwell? Maybe. That's what these decisions and or lack of decisions when it comes to hiring Bieniemy, for instance. That's what those decisions tell me about the Lions. And they're going to have to really prove it wrong to me. And I mean, no one owes me an explanation, but do the players think that? Like, and if so, how attractive is that as a free agent destination? Suddenly you're having to rely on nailing things in the draft, but haven't been able to do that as an organization. So a little bit of a rant here, but I think two very different opposites. The Packers, a very well-run organization that understands putting smart people in place and how to make excellent personnel decisions when it comes to coaches and with players. The Lions have not shown that at all. And the results have been there. The Lions haven't won a division title since the early 90s. I mean, they, and to me, they've also been, you know, outside of the Barry Sanders era in the 90s, they weren't so great in the 80s, 70s. I mean, this team was one of the most dominant football teams in the 50s and 60s. And since then, it hasn't been. It's been absolutely awful. That's ownership to me. The Ford family's owned this team for so long. Maybe they shouldn't be. Maybe you should give it to people who actually know how to run sports franchises, because the Lions have just been awful for the last basically five decades. And it doesn't look like it's going to stop. Which, again, Packers fan, not complaining. Happy about it. We'll sweep them every year if that's what it takes. But it's just, I feel bad for Eric Bieniemy, and I feel bad for, you know, for people looking up to that, you know, people of color, black individuals who are thinking, I want to be a head coach someday, and they're seeing the barriers for someone like Bieniemy who's had so much success. You know, I could imagine that could get quite hopeless, and it's really sending the wrong message. The NFL, how many, you know, Martin Luther King tweets did the NFL send out on Martin Luther King Day? Which, not that's a bad thing. You should be celebrating Martin Luther King and providing his message. But the NFL, unlike Ted Thompson, I was saying, you know, message to players and coach to, you know, you've got to hold yourself accountable to the way you act for this organization. You know, he talked the talk, but he walked the walk. The NFL are not walking the walk right now when it comes to supporting equality, racial equality. They really aren't. And I don't know if that's all in the league. This is really on the team owners. It's on them to need to change. There's only so much the league can do. They can't force the owners to hire certain head coaches. I know they tried to, you know, talk about the Rooney Rule, amending it, giving draft picks if you hire black head coaches, but it's insulting. It shouldn't take that. If Eric Bieniemy is the most qualified, best head coach candidate of this cycle, he should get one of the, I think, seven head coaching jobs that there were. Not Dan Campbell. That's my point. But that's it for now. Sorry for anyone that this turned into a massive rant, but it just, you know, it you know, for all the things that Ted Thompson tried to do in terms of bring the league forward, in terms of, you know, ending discrimination and just, you know, making smart decisions, having people earn their jobs, the Lions are undercutting that completely with this head coaching hire, in my opinion. And it's frankly really insulting. And so I would hope that the league can move forward, but it seems like the Lions are going to be one of those teams it's going to take so long for them to move forward, and they're going to be a bad franchise for a while. Unlike the Packers, who again have had success. We talked about it in the Look Pack series. They were, you know, in the Lombardi era, they were the front runners of racial equality in the 60s when the Martin Luther King civil rights movement was happening. They were the team in the NFL that really exemplified it. And I feel like as an organization, they've had that the entire time, and I think it shows with the on-field success. So, you know, Lions, you want to get better, be better. That's all it takes. And hopefully this episode was, better than I hope it was anyway. Again, want to respect the memory of Ted Thompson and also talk about the respect for human beings. If you have any comments, you can reach us on Twitter at @FPC_Packers. I'm also at Senra Says. You can also download the Full Press Coverage app for free on Android and iOS stores. Pay attention. We'll be, Championship Sunday coming up. We'll be doing a post-game reaction show. whether it's a Packers win or loss, hoping for the win there. So you'll have to find out next time on the Full Press Packers Pod.